When I first started going to the skate park, it's always been my MO to like salute and acknowledge women in the space since there were so few. New York City skateboarders, when you're a teenager, like if you're a skater, you skateboard every single day. So basically, we knew all the girl skaters at the time. When you fall into skateboarding as a teenager, it just becomes your life. It's like the clothes you wear, it's the people you hang out with, it's the videos you watch, it's the music you like to listen to. It's really a lifestyle. The Bronx at the time was a rare moment because there were two of us, girl skaters, two of us who got along, two of us who cared for each other, two of us who were inspired, two of us who had goals to inspire others.
This is Vanguard by Shopify Studios. It's a podcast about how people from unexplored subcultures and unexpected communities make money today. I'm your host, Anshuman Nidhamsetti.
I've always been really inspired by sports. I've always been athletic, and I've never fully identified with being a woman.
I want you to meet Ariana Gill. They're a non-binary skater born and raised in New York City. They're 24 and the co-founder of Brujas, a Bronx-based women and non-binary skate crew and streetwear brand with a political edge.
You don't see political stuff in streetwear. You don't see political stuff in culture or the commercial culture of hip-hop that's extended into streetwear and sneaker culture and hip-hop. That stuff is very niche. It's very academic, or it's relegated to academic circles.
You can find their clothes in stores and pop-ups all over the world, from Brooklyn to Paris to Sydney. And what they're trying to do goes well beyond moving product. Brujas has come to represent a powerful grassroots force for community organizing and social change. And they're using fashion to spread their political message as far and wide as possible.
If somebody else in the skate park knows what we're doing or what we're about, or even knows what the word Brujas means in Spanish, which is witches, that they can assume that space demands respect for women and that space demands just respect, period.
And that demand for respect has attracted a lot of attention from the likes of Vogue, W Magazine, and GQ. But it's often misplaced, focusing on the patriarchal, quote-unquote, novelty of the people who make up the crew. But that barely scratches the surface of what they're actually trying to do. Today on Vanguard, if you're a small business, how do you get your message out? And how do you thread that needle when your message is about some truly radical ideas? Ariana first picked up a skateboard when they were 14, back when they lived on the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
My little brother got a skateboard for his birthday, and he never used to use it because our local at the time was Tompkins Square Park in the East Village or Lower East Side area of Manhattan. And he used to just get embarrassed, like intimidated by the other guys. And I didn't really feel embarrassed when I went. I mean, I felt the pressure, like, oh, like people are looking at me. But I took his board to the park one day and was like, this is so fun. Like, I'm taking this board.
In 2010, Ariana's family moved uptown to the Bronx.
The Bronx is the last stronghold of New York City, besides East New York, and parts of Queens, of course. Shout out Queens.
Suddenly, they found themselves in an entirely different landscape, complete with its own culture and its own rules.
When you go uptown in the Bronx, it's all local kids. You never, not even one time, would ever see somebody who wasn't from New York City skating in the Bronx. It's just the same 45 kids, I'd say. Definitely all Latino and Black, as a person who's mixed, I'm half white. Like, I was the only white person in the space besides another kid who was actually Cuban. So the two white people who were in the space ever were actually white passing Latinos or white Latinos.
And the closest place to skate was the 157th Street Skate Park, their new local. That's where Ariana would meet someone else who didn't fit the very male profile of a skater. A Bronx local, Shayla Grullion.
Shayla grew up just like 5 or 6 blocks away from the park as well. When I first started going to the skate park, I was always friendly with her.
With Shayla, Ariana was experiencing New York life outside of the textbooks she'd been reading in school.
I was coming from a highly academic environment in Oberlin, or a politicized academic environment, and it never felt as real as it did when you see the police every day at the skate park and when you have to work together to gather your resources to do simple things like get out of the Bronx, go to Rockaway Beach. We used to go to Rockaway Beach sometimes together.
The skate park was a second home for Ariana and Shayla. They looked out for each other.
When I was really starting to like be at the park every day that summer, when I needed something, like I was setting up a board and I needed grip tape, and my friend Shayla turned to her friend and was like, oh, do you have a dollar? And then her friend gave her the dollar. Then she gave me the dollar. And then I went and got grip tape. And I was like, damn, good looking out. Like, it was just easy. Like, it just felt like there wasn't too much animosity and there was a lot of generosity in the space. Like, we spent a lot of time together.
Ariana and Shayla hung out at 157 all the time. And because of their constant presence, they started to attract other women and non-binary skaters to the park.
The Bronx 157 Park was probably one of the most active sites where women were skateboarding.
The park started blowing up. Sponsorship offers and filming tricks started happening for a lot of regulars, but it was still a boys' club. Ariana and their friends were overlooked. So they decided to join forces.
It's no animosity really towards the boys that weren't including us. That was just culturally the norm. It was more like, we feel so excited in these spaces, but we don't really have anything to show for it. I think I said it, I was like, oh, Brujas. So Brujas was founded in 2014. The Bronx 157 Park kind of became known as the Brujas headquarters.
Think of it as a strategic coalition, a response to the challenges of living in a big city when you don't come from a wealthy background.
Basically, in New York City, there are a lot of ways that you're criminalized if you're poor, but one of those ways is if you don't pay for the train, you can get upwards of a $100 fine. You can also be arrested. So people who had outstanding transit fare evasion fines, we sat with them and a laptop and just paid them on the spot. So about like $600 worth of fines were paid.
A lot of what Brujas started to do was advocate for people with no access to legal and financial support. And if the stakes weren't high enough, many of the same folks caught up in the system were friends and family of the Brujas crew.
If we had a more appropriate way of dealing with things that are very human, like addiction, if we had a more healthy system, like more people that I love would be alive today.
But as a collective, everyone in Brujas knew they could rely on each other for anything.
We moved as a unit. Whatever resources needed to be allocated to allow us to move as a unit, we made sure that happened. Oh, you need to get on the train? No problem. Like, we're getting on the train together. So we used to do this thing, like, I used to have an unlimited, and we would swipe one unlimited, then give the other person who didn't have a MetroCard the same unlimited. They would pretend to swipe it or swipe it. Then go to the teller at the MTA and be like, what's up? It said just used. And then they would either let them in or that person would then have to wait like 20 minutes until it renewed so that we could use unlimited again. The summer of 2014 was the best summer of my life. I just was super relaxed. I was prioritizing wellness, like happiness in my life. I was super enamored too with the community around me. In in the year that Brujas formed in 2014, we threw a house party at my dad's house in Washington Heights in his apartment. That was the beginning of the party as the gathering point for what we do, sort of bringing one of the places that we could be very active in the skateboarding lifestyle was actually providing a place to go. So we threw our first house party called the Brujas Party, just like spelled out P-A-R-R-I. It was another example of a community collaborative effort. Our friend, whose dad was a DJ, lent us his sound system. Then we set up a laptop and DJed off YouTube. We did like an installation of Christmas lights in like different geometry. And then we bought a bunch of drinks and stuff. It was really great.
Over the next 2 years, the crew kept throwing bigger and better parties all over New York. And what began as simply DJing off of YouTube turned into live performances by up-and-coming rappers like Young M.A. The way Ariana saw it, the parties were just an extension of how they'd been building community all along.
Fast forward to summer of 2016, I had been organizing the drag ball at my college at Oberlin, which was like a really big deal on campus. So I was like, oh, I want to throw a formal. So, you know, sort of in the tradition of the drag ball and the queer formal, we came up with anti-prom.
The anti-prom was an attempt to throw a party that prioritized queer and gender non-conforming kids. People historically excluded from things like, well, prom. Just like the culture of gender at skate parks, Brujas were trying to change another entrenched system. But the crew also saw anti-prom as an opportunity for something more.
We were like, okay, 2 years in, we've been throwing these parties, we've been like doing editorial and interviews and getting some Tumblr and Instagram attention. The anti-prom is going to be our brand launch party. It was super DIY production. My godmother's husband rented us his sound system, which was super, super, super booming. One of the DJs brought their equipment. We made all these empanadas and rice and beans and fed like the first 100 people who got there. We did not really encourage people to come alone. The idea was to like ask a date, like ask your crush, whatever, or ask your three crushes or bring your squad. That was also the moment when everybody was kind of like, oh, this could be a pretty big thing. Like half of the New York City youth just came out to this party.
The success of the first anti-prom was a turning point for Brujas, and they were prepared. That same summer, they started printing their own t-shirts.
What I think is really important about merchandising as a strategy is that the message gets to live outside of the internet. So somebody can put a Brujas hoodie on, go to their local skate park, and know that not only are they sort of protected by the good omens and the good deeds that we try to put out into the world, but also that if somebody else in the skate park knows what we're doing or what we're about, that they can assume that space demands respect, period.
From the very beginning, Brujas' project was inseparable from the work of social change. Much of it had to do with the political climate in the U.S. in 2016 when Trump came into power. But the issues they were most interested in, they went back decades. Every member of Brujas saw firsthand how the U.S. criminal justice system treated people differently by class or the color of their skin. Whatever money Brujas made, they planned to put back in the hands of people most affected by that system. With the success of anti-prom still fresh in their minds, they started brainstorming ways to meaningfully spread their message.
We're getting a lot of attention for being New York City born and raised youth. We're getting a lot of attention for talking our shit, but not in a specifically targeted sort of campaign or position. It was like, these people are a group of skateboarders. They're a group of activists. They care about gentrification, they care about their community, but it never was articulated on any specific position.
So they decided to use that momentum to launch their first streetwear collection. a limited edition line called 1971.
It was inspired aesthetically by the Attica prison riot in 1971, and it was an experimental project to see if we could use streetwear to materially support prisoners and those affected by incarceration.
The Attica prison riot was the largest of its kind in the U.S. Over 1,200 inmates, majority Black and Latino, took control of the prison and held its staff hostage. It was a response to the dangerous overcrowding and denial of basic human rights at the facility. Think access to showers, sanitation. The event would galvanize the global movement towards prisoners' rights, which continues to this day.
This was our way of actually making radical ideas and sort of empowering people to envision new worlds accessible. That's why we called the piece the PE set, because it's like a two-piece set, like a t-shirt and shorts. PE, like physical education, but also more explicitly political education.
The clothes came in two colors, black and white. There were t-shirts with a small 1971 logo on the front that said, "Correction, fire to all the prisons," on the back. And shorts with the slogan, "Prisons are obsolete, give them hell, negotiations from the door of a cell." And their radical idea, abolish all prisons.
Prison abolition is a slightly more radical approach to what people on all sides of the political spectrum identify as a massive issue affecting people in the United States and obviously globally. But the United States has about a quarter of the world's prisoners, which is a significantly higher percentage per capita than other countries.
Prison abolition goes well beyond criminal justice reform and argues that incarceration does more bad than good for society. And okay, that's a tough sell to most people. But 1971 wasn't your typical streetwear line. It wasn't meant for most people. From the very beginning, everyone in Brujas wanted to make their political ideas accessible to communities that had been affected the most by structural and institutional racism. Mass market appeal was never the goal.
So that's when we started using streetwear as a political vehicle, because we have this very specific audience that we're trying to reach, and we get a lot of attention from other types of audiences, but ultimately we're trying to speak to the kids that we grew up with, the kids at the skate park, my 10 best friends from the Bronx skate park, 157. Like, we were trying to design a strategy to reach those people, people like the people we grew up with, people like ourselves. I was excited by the effectiveness of integrating prison abolition into a skateboarding community. We were able to introduce prison abolition as an ideology into the communities most affected by criminalization through something that was accessible, relevant, and exciting.
The Kickstarter campaign for 1971 began in late 2016 and started receiving attention almost immediately.
We used Kickstarter because we thought it would boost the excitement. Within the first 2 or 3 days, we had most street culture platforms write about it. So that wasn't anticipated. We actually didn't send out a press release with the line. It just got attention and people wrote about it.
In fact, it exceeded expectations.
Our initial goal was $10,000, which would have probably resulted in about a $6,000 or $7,000 fund after production, and we raised $23,000. So we doubled what we were able to do.
After paying off their initial production costs, Brujas wanted to put their money back in the hands of their community. Again, people who had been affected the most by the criminal justice system.
We allocated about 60% of what was raised in profits to an organization that directly supports queer and trans prisoners of color called F2L, Fight to Live. That was a $7,000 donation. What remained in our fund after that $7,000 donation was about $5,000. That was distributed to family members of incarcerated community members who had been, you know, materially supporting their loved ones for years. we sort of tried to emulate the F2L model, which was explicitly non-moralizing or deserving approach to distributing funds. We weren't trying to be like, we're trying to support people who are like wrongfully incarcerated. We're like, no, we want to support anybody who's been incarcerated regardless of whether they, by moral standards, deserve to be there. We were just trying to like create a model that wasn't moralizing or like, this is what you should be doing with the money. You should invest it in your education or you should invest. It was no strings attached.
What I find fascinating is why Brujas decided to adopt merchandise as their strategy. Ariana said it themselves, the message gets to live outside the internet. But I was curious, what was merch able to do that their online following, all their write-ups in The Fader and Vogue and GQ, couldn't? According to Ariana, Brujas actually struggles online. They believe they're a victim of algorithmic bias.
Nobody really sees the content that we put out because our algorithm is so biased against us that even people who have interest in our work, like our pictures, will still not see what we post, which is so sad because it's like we put out all this bomb content that we put so much time and energy into and nobody sees it.
In addition to posts about their parties and clothes and really dope tricks, the collective also posts about the increased presence of police at local skate parks.
One of our most popular posts got 20,000 views of just a cop in Tompkins Square Park waving his baton. But that post was flagged so many times by people who align themselves with the police, believe in Blue Lives Matter.
The kind of post that can get you and your account in trouble.
So now our page is buried by the algorithm because we've been reported and flagged to the point where we can't even reach the people who follow us on a digital platform.
And that's why physical merchandise like 1971 as a business strategy was so important. You can't bury real life with an algorithm, at least not yet. There's also another reason for physical merch, and it has to do with their brand.
Sometimes people will critique Brujas by saying, well, if you guys are anti-capitalist, why do you merchandise? Well, why do you engage in the market? And the answer is that we didn't choose to be commercially influential.
What Ariana is referring to is the eternal practice of major corporations appropriating youth culture, its artists, its creators, without any kind of credit. Think of how the rapper 2 Milly sued the makers of Fortnite for allegedly using his dance, the Milly Rock, without any compensation.
I'm saying that young cultural workers from the streets should be compensated for their work. They should be respected for their work. They should be celebrated for their work. And they should be given the resources to move beyond cultural influence and actually become politically influential.
This happens all the time, and it's frustrating for small businesses who don't have a platform to speak out or the money to lawyer up.
When we got to see all these mega retail companies profit and continue to employ people based on aesthetics and a consumer base that we were helping to develop, it then became necessary for us to step up and fill the void.
Brujas wanted to control their own message, their brand, and who gets to adopt and influence it. That kind of autonomy is hard to come by.
We have to try to disrupt that cycle and create a model that we would then encourage other people and other young people who are commercially influential to emulate. Because if all these other people who have nothing to do with the production of these ideas or the production of these values, aesthetics, and new spaces are living middle-class existence off of the work of young people of color, then so should those same people of color. Ultimately, like, if kids love to skate and kids love to design and kids love to party and kids love to be together and kids love to, like, actually exist in harmony, there's no reason when they get older that they shouldn't continue to do those things. And if they're able to create some sort of economically smart system around those things that they love to do, that's alternative, that isn't extractive, that is cooperative, that is caring, then the likelihood of them being able to continue doing those things is higher.
A I'll be the first to admit that those are some very lofty goals. But we're all living in a time of extreme precarity. Wages are stagnant and jobs are dwindling. If this is an economic reality, then working to pour the money you make back into your community feels like a real victory. I mean, it has to count for something. The stakes are too high.
We're working so hard to create an infrastructure for when our homies get out of jail or when somebody's really down in the dumps, that they have something that they can look to, like either be inspired by or be a part of, to help them keep going. But ultimately, like, there are so many poisons out there that are a result of criminalization of Black people that still exist and are working to, like, literally kill people that I love.
At the end of our chat, I asked Ariana if there was something about skating, the sport, the lifestyle, that helped them with the day-to-day challenges of running a small business.
I went skateboarding like a few days ago, and it's funny because it's too exciting. Every 15 minutes, I have to like stop, tap my body, check in, because like the adrenaline, the like excitement, it's just the most fun, most exciting thing to do that I've ever done. Skateboarding was the thing that taught me how to interact with others. And I think that fundamentally the most number one thing that I've learned doing business over the last 3 years is that the people that you work with are the value of the company. So if you know how to work with others and you know how to build community and build spaces that feel good, you can have a successful business. The number one influence of skateboarding on my business has just been staying rooted to the people that I'm working with and staying rooted to the community that makes it possible. We still need significantly more power than we currently have.
Ariana Gill is the co-founder of Brujas. This episode was produced by Michelle McAllum, Ajay Chauhan, Emma Feddersen, and me, Anshuman Idhamsetti. Our score was composed by Jim Guthrie. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks. And before we go, here's a preview of our next episode.
I don't want to talk about race, and I don't want to talk about Islamophobia, and I don't want to talk about all this crap. What I'd really love to talk about is what I'm passionate about and what I'm working towards. I just like to talk about comics.